for the recorder. This is the 1st of April, 2nd of April. Day after yesterday. And we're still looking mildly at Blue Cliff Record, case 88. Okay. Pointer. Xuan Sha's guiding and aiding living beings. Taking charge of the situation, he hits home and smashes to pieces the golden chains and the hidden barrier. He acts according to the imperative so that he obliterates all tracks and traces. Tell me, where can there be any confusion? Case. Xuan Sha, teaching the community, said, "The old adepts everywhere all speak of guiding and aiding living beings. Supposing they encountered three kinds of sick person, how would they guide them? With a blind person, they could pick up the gavel or raise the whisk, but he wouldn't see. With a deaf person, he wouldn't hear the point of words. With a mute person, if they had him speak, he wouldn't be able to speak. But how would they guide such people? If they couldn't guide these people, then the Buddha Dharma has no effect." This morning in the meditation walk, there was a moment when we were walking out where the clouds were pink above us. And it was remarkable. But I couldn't help reflecting, as I do a dozen times a day, how often the clouds are pink and I don't see them. And I don't see them because, not just because they're not in my sight, but because my mind is endlessly going round and round on its little tumble dryer, concerned with all sorts of oddities. And the moment the oddities fall away, whether by me shouting at them or by some accident, clouds are there waiting for me. Ah. Then I discuss how wonderful the clouds are and how stupid I am, and I'm back in the tumble dryer. Porridge pot. That's how our life is. As much as we try and have an idea of how our meditations or our zazen or our practice should be, our lives should be, however much we tell ourselves to pay attention, be present and all of that, that's how it goes. We're tied up in our ourselves, and then suddenly we're opened. Ah, then we're tied up in ourselves, then we're open. And then if we add up the times that we are tied up in ourselves and compare them to the times that we're open, we lose heart. And it was fascinating in the interviews yesterday how pretty much everyone, including me, says, oh, meditation's so bad, so difficult, or I had such a difficult day's practice, and today's better, or yesterday was better, and today's worse, and all of that. And it strikes me yet again how this reflects a kind of model, an image that we hold on to about how our zazen, our meditation, should be. We keep on partly habitually, partly for other reasons, we just keep steering into that hopeful image of meditation as a constant state of bliss and peacefulness of mind and happiness and so on. And of course, when that doesn't happen, we compare, we judge ourselves, we're disappointed, and we have that kind of down feeling. And everybody does it. One of the kind of symptoms of this is how we create meditation celebrities. People in America, you can see it very clear. It's a kind of celebrity circuit. I can name them, but I won't. And everyone thinks they have a wonderful meditation practice. If only I had a mind like yours, I could be happy. And a celebrity and rich. I remember doing a retreat with a man called Joseph Goldstein, who some of you will know. Just a wonderful Vipassana meditation teacher. Just a lovely, lovely person. And very good teacher. He came out to South Africa. I was at the Buddhist Retreat Center at the time. And I remember someone saying to him, I sat next to you at breakfast, Joseph, and I could just feel the peace. I could just feel you attending to your porridge, Joseph. It was so wonderful. I'm so grateful for your example. I can't remember what he said, but later he said to me, he shook his head and he said, that poor woman, if she only knew what was going on in my mind. But that's, I think, part of our sort of celebrity neurosis. We just hope that even if I can't make it for now, that somebody is. That it's at least a possibility, you know. It's like having a slim waist. Yeah, we do that. We get quite desperate, really. And so this is one of the interesting things we notice first about Zazen practice, is how little we attend and how little we can control our attention. The habitual tumble dryer round of stuff that goes on, sometimes sublime, sometimes ridiculous, mostly just terribly boring and inconsequential. That's the truth of it. That's what is. And our practice is to be with what is, not to continue cultivating an image of how things should be. At least as a place to start, we begin with things as they are. So our sense of our practice really needs to broaden. That it isn't about having an attentive mind, a peaceful experience, that kind of thing. It's also about our failure to attend, not even failure to attend, about our involvement in ourselves, our fascination in ourselves that takes our attention, that encloses our attention, kind of imprisons it. And to see the pattern of that self-enclosure and the difference when it just opens, when the walls of Jericho come tumbling down and the clouds are pink. We need to have that generosity of spirit in our practice to include both of those. And really this means that Zazen is not about finding a solid state of attentiveness and bliss, but of just turning up. Being willing to just turn up and be with whatever is happening in our life. Already that is just great Zen practice. Already that is a great life just manifesting itself. We come, whether we feel like it or not, whether we're enthusiastic or downhearted, whether we're feeling unwell or good, just the willingness to step into this room and put our hands together and bow to this. That's already great, 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 great life and practice. The thing about our fascination with being a successful Zazenji and having a blissful practice is that it's actually all about me. My practice, my bliss, my attention, my failure, my stupidity, my inadequacy. It's all about me. It's the very thing that doesn't allow the pink clouds to become part of our life. It's the very thing that keeps us enclosed in this private prison of this porridge pot. And the Dharma, that's not the Dharma. That's some kind of mindfulness, self-development pattern that we're in. And we all have it to some extent. But the Dharma is beyond that. The Dharma, the teaching, the truth of this life of ours is it's not massaging or assuaging our porridge pot self. It's about lifting the lid. It's about seeing the depth and breadth of this world in which we live. And using that as our reference point. And it's always going to be beyond what we think. It's always going to be beyond what we can regulate or manipulate, succeed at, fail at. And this practice just allows for that possibility. And retreat practice itself, the willingness to step forward as monastics for a week, allows us to see that however much we try and be good at this, that never works. The only thing that happens is that we keep turning up, whether we like it or not. And as we do that, we find that despite ourselves, despite all our struggles and our opinions and our efforts and our strategies, that something is happening. That the walls between us and this world are beginning to become porous. That the world itself is seeping in to our lives just as we step back. And that whenever we're able to allow that to happen, the pink clouds are there for us. We are there for us. The wooden floor, the person sitting next to you. And it's not our doing. And all we can say, once again, is thank you. Let's just sit for a moment. Thank you for your attention. It's wonderful. We're going to... It really is fantastic. So pleased. thrilled. Excited. We will continue with interviews today. We've now learnt all about each other's children, wives, ex-wives, and so on. So we're going to zip along a bit. So I have a question. The teacher in the story, his name is Xuan Sha. I meant to say this earlier, but anyway, you're not going anywhere. Xuan Sha also didn't want to go anywhere. He stayed at his monastery, and everyone come and say, why don't you go somewhere else? Why didn't you go and visit? And he'd say, this is my home, you know. This is where I sit. So one day he did go out and or set out to visit a neighboring monastery. And as he set out, he stubbed his toe. And as the story goes, he got enlightened. Please don't get any idea what enlightenment means. Certainly don't ask me. well, we're coming to that. so that's the story. He decided, I suspect, that really wasn't going anywhere else after all, and he had been quite correct to stay at home. So he went back home and stayed at home. That's part of the story. Anyway, as some of you will know, who've had Nanxin Ray's ear, he was at a restaurant in Cork Bay and fell and hit his toe. And as he tells it, everybody went, oh, sir, you hurt. So, Ray stubbing his toe, Xuan Sha stubbing his toe. Which one got enlightened? And if you say Xuan Sha, I'll give you a hint. If you say Xuan Sha, I'll say no. If you say Ray, I'll say no. If you say both, I'll say no. If you say neither, I'll say no. So I look forward to the morning enormously. Thank you.